our gut feeling is not right. It's just an assumption, and we have to treat it like an assumption. And I can't stress that enough. We are not our users. Everyone involved into the product development process has gained special knowledge. And also when we're working in these tech companies, we also have a very close relationship to technology. So we cannot be our users.
Welcome to the User Defenders Podcast, where we interview successful UX designers who fight for the user in order to inspire and equip you to do the same. And now, here's your host, Jason Ogle.
Greetings, User Defenders. Welcome to episode 26. I'm your host, Jason Ogle. Today, I got to interview product thinking and thought-leading superhero, Nikhil Blasa. If you're listening to this on the go, you may want to listen again where you have a pen and paper handy, because Nikhil drops so many value bombs, you'll want to take notes. Can't wait for you to hear my interview with Nikhil Blasa. This episode is brought to you in part by Universal Mind, a digital design and consulting company based in Denver, Colorado. Picture the ideal state for your business. In a complex and ever-changing digital world, Universal Mind will help you get there through design thinking workshops, UX strategy and design, technology consulting, agile services, and software development. They also believe in supporting user defenders to train and inspire the next generation of designers. Learn more at universalmind.com. Nikhil Blasa is a product and interaction designer from Hamburg, Germany, currently working at Zing. He's the founder of Design Made for You Studio. He's a fantastic writer who's published viral articles on Medium, Fastco Design, and Envision. He's passionate about bringing product thinking to the world of product development in order to, as he says, build products that people actually want. When he was a teenager, he played guitar in a punk rock band. That's awesome. Nikhil, do you still play?
No, I don't.
That's great, man. Punk rock. I used to play a little bit myself, more like death metal, but I guess kind of similar genres. Anyway, welcome, Nikhil. I'm super excited to have you on the show today.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for having me. I'm truly honored to have the opportunity to be here.
Oh, I'm honored to have you, my friend. I've been following your work for a while here, and as you know, and as I put it out there on Twitter, I finally coaxed you into coming on the show, so I'm really, really thrilled about that. You're a superhero to me, too, so I thank you for that. And as you know, we take a fun superhero approach. Every superhero has a secret identity and origin story, and let's talk about yours. I'd like to start the show by you taking a few moments just to give us a look into your personal life.
Yeah, my personal life. what can I say? I'm traveling a lot. This is something I pretty much enjoy in my spare time. I used to travel to Australia, New Zealand. I was in San Francisco, and I traveled on the West Coast in the U.S. This is something I enjoy very much. The other thing I'm actually doing right now is learning to skateboard.
Oh, wow.
I'm always curious to learn new things. And yeah, this is pretty much what I'm doing right now. Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. Travel is a great thing. I wish I could do a little more of it myself, but I have a lot of children that would bankrupt me. So we do a lot of driving. If we do travel, we do a little road trips and stuff. But I think that's awesome. New Zealand, that's like, I think everybody immediately thinks of Lord of the Rings when they...
Yeah, definitely.
Right? Because Peter Jackson really brought that landscape to life. I don't think any of us really knew exactly how beautiful and gorgeous that landscape was out there. But very cool. Were you at a conference or something in San Francisco, or just seeing the sights?
No, actually, I was giving some talks on product thinking.
Yes.
At some UX design meetups. And I also attended other meetups where... I met other designers and where we did some knowledge exchange, and I visited some companies. This was basically a business trip, and after 2 weeks, my wife joined, and we went on a road trip to Arizona and Nevada and California. Kind of these things.
That's awesome, man. What a good time. And you actually got to speak at LinkedIn, right? Was it LinkedIn? There was another company as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Awesome. This was pretty nice. Big audience. It was pretty much fun.
That's so cool. What an honor to be invited to share product thinking with the LinkedIn team.
That was great.
And who knew at the time you were there that Microsoft was buying LinkedIn?
I didn't.
Yeah, I know. That's pretty awesome. So tell us your origin story, Nikhil. What inspired you to pursue a career in this exciting, challenging, and ever-evolving field?
Actually, I was not prepared for this. I went to art school, and UX design was not taught there. So no one was basically teaching me what UX design is or how it works. So after art school, I started a business, or I was self-employed. I did freelance work for several companies, and I just did what I thought would be right. I didn't knew anything about user tests, about products, or about wireframes or stuff like that. I just did designs based on my gut feelings. And at some point, I realized something is wrong, because some designs didn't work out very well. And then I started to dive into UX design and learn more and more and more. And at some point in my career, I just thought, okay, I can't learn everything by myself. I need people around me that do the same things. And then I started to work at Xing. And I'm still there today.
Very nice. Very nice. You seem to be enjoying working there, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's great. It's a very big product organization. And yeah, of course, not everything is awesome. And in a fast-growing big product organization, there are also some problems. But all in all, it's a very inspiring environment.
Cool.
I have a lot of amazing, smart colleagues, and I learned a lot of from them.
That's really great. I was thinking about your design background and education, and it's similar to mine. I've started with a graphic design and visual certification, communication certification, I should say. And it's kind of interesting. I mean, part of the class was prepress and color mixing and things for print, and it's rare to find a print class nowadays, right? It's really kind of interesting how our field has just blown up and everything is digital now. But anyway, just getting a little reminiscent there, but that's how I started as well. That's awesome. Nikhil, who's been the biggest superhero in your work and why?
My biggest superhero? Okay, this is a tough one.
It's hard to pick just one, isn't it?
Yeah. I have many superheroes. As I just mentioned, everyone I'm working with is a superhero to me, and inspires me because I have so many clever, smart people around me at work, and they teach me everything they know, and I give back as lot as I can. I think the one who inspired me the most was the first product manager I used to work with at Xing, Jan Mills, and he basically taught me everything about product management. And you know, before I went to Xing, I was very deep diving into UX design, and then someone told me about product management, and I could experience both sides. So, this was very, very, very cool. So he's still my superhero, I guess.
That's cool. So you have a lot of experience and background in product management, at least getting into the UX field. And I'm curious, we hear product management and we hear UX design, and you wrote a really brilliant article on product thinking, which is, I think, a term you sort of coined with sort of merging the two. Can you speak a little more to that? Like, what's the difference between product management, UX design, and product thinking? How does that work?
First of all, I think both disciplines have a lot in common. Both of them want to make a product successful. And they have a shared mindset because both of them want to solve problems for users. They have to make decisions on the strategy, on how to solve these problems. And they also need to be visionaries because We have roadmaps, right? So we have to define what we do in 2017, 2018, or 2020. And this is something that connects both disciplines. And I believe that both product management and UX design have to work very, very closely together. Because whenever a UX or a product management is treated as a service, it doesn't work anymore. So they need to work together. But what makes them different is product management is the window to the outside world. So product managers have a lot to do with stakeholder management and stuff like that. And UX designers have more to do with maybe a centralized UX team where they talk about pattern stuff and stuff like that. This is how I think about it.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I was extremely inspired by my product manager as well to get into this field, to really dive deeper into UX. So yeah, there are a lot of similarities. I agree with you. If you weren't doing this for a living, what would be your second career choice and why?
My second career choice? I think I would probably have become playing the guitar in a punk rock band, right?
Nice, yes.
And maybe I would have been more in the economics, because I think it's quite interesting, economics.
So let's talk about life-altering experiences and get into your transformation. Now, as you know, every superhero has some sort of life-altering experience that helps guide their purpose and leads to a transformation where they realize the powers they have and harness them for the greater good. Now, certainly a significant among these is failure. Failure is not something we like to talk about nor put on our LinkedIn page, but it's unquestionably one of life's greatest teachers. Can you tell us a story about what's been the biggest one in your career?
Yeah. I think there hasn't been this one big failure in my career yet, but I'm really looking forward to it, because without failure, there's no learning, right?
Yes, amen.
And without learning, there's no further development, which is bad in many ways.
Mm, good point.
But I'm actually failing every day, but in small steps.
I like that.
I think it's very good. But when I look back, there was this one thing that maybe it was not the biggest failure, but the one that had the biggest impact on my career, I guess. It was when I started Xing, they gave me the task to improve a feature they had in the product. And the feature was quite hard to understand. It was, from my perspective, very poorly designed, and no one was actually interacting with it. So my task was to make it work. And what I did is I went to one of these user feedback coffees. User feedback coffee is a user test format at Xing, where we invite 4 or 8 users, and you have 15 minutes and you can talk to these users. It's like speed dating, actually. And I showed them what I had done. Like, I improved the copy and made it more beautiful, more easy to use, and more understandable. And I showed them my solution, and the reactions were pretty good. People told me, "Yeah, I like that. I want to see that in the product. It's great." So my team and I, we built this, and after shipping it, we found out it didn't work. No one was using it. So we went back to the user feedback coffee with a new solution, and we built it, and still no one was using it. And we found ourselves in this feature death cycle. And after 3 weeks, we realized, okay, nobody wants that. There's a problem with the feature. It's not the problem that it doesn't look nice or that it is not understandable. There's something different. And I think there are mainly three things, the biggest problem was that I asked the user what they want, and people, users, they cannot tell you what they want. You have to figure it out by yourself. Mm-hmm. And yeah, this was a great failure, maybe. And I learned basically three things from that, which was, first of all, that what users say they want is not necessarily what they really want. Secondly, don't spend too much time figuring out a solution when you don't know what the problem is. And third, making something beautiful and understandable and easy to use can improve a product, of course, or a feature, but it cannot create real user value. So this is what we got out of these, of these bigger failure.
That's great. And I like how you say the user feedback coffee. I would show up just for the coffee. But I think that's a great way to really gain.
They also get paid.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I already do that. No, I'm just kidding. No, but like you said, I love what you said. You said, I fail every day. I love that, because if we're not failing, that means we're not trying.
Yeah.
And as you said also so eloquently, if we're not trying, we're not growing and we're not learning, and kind of what's the point, right? Maybe we're in the wrong field or things like that if we lose our curiosity. I think when we stop failing and trying, we've really lost our curiosity, and this field is a large percentage of curiosity about figuring out what the problems are. Like you said, users don't know what the problem is exactly. I mean, they can't explain it. They have an idea what the problem is. They just have trouble explaining what it is and how to solve it. So that's really our jobs, right, to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
And I love in your product thinking article how you say it's not, this was really cool what you said. You said it's not just designers being hired to design the product. The product is actually being hired.
Not the features.
Yeah, I thought that was really insightful, because we don't really think about our products as being employable. But in many ways, they are. And that's what our businesses are paying for, right? They're paying not just us to design it, but there's a lot of outlets that come out of the pockets, right, for a business to design a product, and a lot of different departments and different initiatives that must take place that cost money to design an effective product. So I think the other takeaway I got from that is really kind of subtly pointing to the value and investment our businesses have in their designers as well. Do you think there's a lack of empathy among designers for their businesses?
Yeah, I think so. Sometimes, not everywhere, but sometimes I have the feeling there is. And I think this is also a problem, or it can be a problem. I see more and more UX designers that are kind of frustrated because they want the business to do things they want, like improving on button colors or on white space and typography and stuff like that. And the business is not interested, because they say, well, why should I invest thousands of dollars or euros into typography? What can I get out of this? What is the impact?
What's the ROI?
Right? Yeah, and designers, they become frustrated, and because no one is listening to them. So, and I think when designers think more in terms of a business, they understand, okay, if I go to an executive and tell them maybe please improve the typography, they won't do it. But when I tell them I have tested it and I think we can save thousands of dollars just by changing the typography, you will get hurt.
That is really insightful. That's a great takeaway for all of us, for us defenders, to really think about when we feel strongly about a design, and certainly a design aesthetics. Those are important things. Simplicity, UI, those are really important things. But when we feel really strongly about something that may seem as minimal as a color or a typeface, things like that, what better way to get buy-in and also to build trust as a designer on our teams and with our stakeholders in business than to say, you know what? I know this doesn't seem like a big deal, but can I test this? can we just test this and see if we get any lift, any look at the data after? I think it's a great way to sort of bring UX into maybe an environment that doesn't have a really strong presence yet. Maybe the team of one is trying to kind of instill that. But what a great way to build trust, too, for the business to say, you know, I think, like, my gut's telling me, I'm assuming that we can really actually have more success if we try this, if we do this, and let's do a quick test, right?
Yeah, well, when you want to convince a stakeholder, you have to give them facts they care about. Mm. And yeah, these facts are normally written down in KPIs, like activity, new members, or I don't know, paying customers. And when you do that, you can easily convince them. That's true.
That's great. Great takeaway. Do you have a story of something really crazy or super awkward that happened during user testing, speaking of which?
I think every user test is crazy or awkward. Because you go there with your best intentions, and people quickly turn your world upside down. Mm. So if you're afraid of failing, user testing is definitely not for you.
Oh, wow.
But actually, I've never experienced something really crazy from the users, I must admit, but more from the interviewers.
Oh, wow. Tell us a story.
Yeah, there was this one story of an interviewer who asked the participant, do you want to pay for this? And how much would you pay for it? And honestly, you cannot expect a proper answer. It doesn't work like this. A willingness to pay cannot be inquired; it must be observed. And yeah, it was silly.
Oh,
so
wow.
You can never ask customers how they will behave.
Yeah, that's a good one.
You will never get an honest answer because they simply don't know how they will behave in a certain situation. It's impossible.
Wow. There's so many problems with that question, and I think the two main ones is, first of all, it's a yes or no answer, which you're not going to get very much data, right? Secondly, it seems like it's more focused on the solution versus the problem, right? The outcome versus the journey, the outcome versus the value, and I think that was also something that kind of I thought of as well. It's like we need to really bring value before we start thinking about money, right? I mean, money's certainly part of it, but I mean, I always kind of think about in the Facebook movie. Did you see that? The Facebook movie?
Yeah, I did.
You remember how the guy playing Mark Zuckerberg was like, hey, let's make it cool, and then we'll figure out how to make money off it, right?
Yeah.
Let's make this like something that people can't live without, sort of. Like, let's create something that just is revolutionary, and the money will follow.
Yeah. So yeah, exactly. You have to prove that you delivered value to the users, like test it. Mm. And when you found out, okay, I can prove it with numbers, I found something that people consider valuable, then you can think about, okay, how can I make money out of it? It's the question is not sexy, I think, but in the end, every business works like that. We have to make money out of value we provide.
Amen. And that's the constant tug of war, right, with our roles?
Yeah.
Right. So absolutely. And you're doing an awesome job of articulating this problem and offering some really, really great solutions too, and food for thought. So definitely going to point the defenders to your articles that have gotten a lot of traction, man. They really have. How did you do that?
I was also surprised.
I think you have like 5,600 hearts on your product thinking.
Yeah,
medium.
And actually I don't know why.
I do.
It's
really great.
I didn't wrote it for this big audience. I just wrote it because it was something I wanted to put down. I wanted to put my thoughts into an article. I was very, very surprised that people liked it so lot.
Wow. Well done, my friend. Keep it up. What's your design superpower, Nikhil?
Oh, my God. My design superpower. I think I'm very good at solving complex problems.
Mm.
I love to work on challenging projects, especially when most people say it cannot be done, because
Oh, wow.
It gets me incredibly motivated to make it work.
Love that.
And actually, I've always enjoyed to do what people say I cannot do. And not only in my working life, but also in my private life. For instance, when I was a kid, my teachers in school often told me that I'm not smart enough, that I will never graduate from school, that I will never go to university, that I will never speak in a foreign language. Or when I grew older and got more interested in design, they also told me, you cannot go to art school. You are simply not good enough. And in the end, luckily, all of them were wrong because I did all these things. So I think this is the reason why I get so motivated when people tell me, you cannot do that.
Wow. Nikhil, I'm so inspired by that answer. I love your spirit of just being driven to success, being driven to succeed versus accepting whatever label people may have put on you, especially as a child. My heart breaks for you and being a young, impressionable kid trying to make his way and learn about life and being sort of told you can't do something. I admire your spirit, man. I'm inspired that you just said, you know what? Yes, I can. And watch me. I mean, that's what this show is about right there, brother. I mean it. That inspires me. I know our defenders are inspired by that as well, because there's a lot of problems we encounter in our field. And I think that once we just kind of give up and say, oh, you know, you're right, I can't solve this problem, that's when we kind of find ourselves in a tough spot, because our jobs are to find those solutions. And so I appreciate that. And also I think of the E plus R equals O. I just heard that on another podcast today. It's funny because E is event, R is reaction, O is outcome. Event plus reaction equals outcome. You've done well, my friend. Thank you. It's a great great story. What's your design kryptonite?
Oh my God. I think, well, the one thing I cannot handle very well is internal company politics. Because it doesn't make much sense for me. And especially in a fast-growing company with many stakeholders and product teams, it gets very exhausting because everyone wants to be involved in everything.
Right.
And sometimes just for her or his ego. And yeah, if you want something to get done, or if you want a decision on something, you basically need to go to every single one of these egos and convince them. That costs a lot of valuable time, money, and effort, and mostly ends up in bad compromises and frustration on both sides. So for me, it's not reasonable when we think of balance, of the balance between costs and results. And normally I try to stay out of these company politics. And when I do have to fight for something, then I always try to find allies because I don't want to deal with these situations on my own.
That's our ego is not our amigo. I say it and I'll say it again. It doesn't help anybody. And we need a little bit to be confident in our work. We need a little bit of that. But the ego that starts saying, I'm right just because I'm right, because I'm the designer and whatever. And then you get into a peeing match, with each other. There's no good benefit to that. And teams, thankfully, I think there's been a really great evolution, especially with a lot of leading companies that are doing some innovative stuff. A lot of it starts with kind of breaking down walls, breaking down silos, getting the team together, making communication easier. I think we've seen some great strides in that area. So I appreciate that answer. I think a lot of us will resonate with that as well and feel the same way as you. Can't stand politics and negative cultures are awful. And it all comes down to the people, right? And that all comes down to the hiring process. And I had a great interview with Austin Knight from HubSpot that's going to release on the 4th of July. And he addressed this very head on, because HubSpot is meticulous about their culture and about who they hire. And he made that same point. It all begins with your hires, hiring the right people. So great points. So Nikhil, I like to caveat this question because I know that you've you've not gone where you are on your own. You've, like you said, which I really appreciate, that everyone you work with is kind of a superhero to you, which I think is awesome. That means you've got a strong team. So I want to say, I want to ask you, what would your UX design superhero name be?
I think it would be Deep Thought.
Oh, wow. I like that.
It's because, I don't know, are you familiar with The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams?
I'm familiar with that only because I played the video game on my old Apple IIe, but I've not seen the movie or the book.
You should read it.
Book.
Okay. It's very nice. And there, in this book, there's this supercomputer, which is called Deep Thought, and it was built to come up with the answer to the ultimate question of life, the universe, and everything. And the fun part of the story is that after a billion years of calculation, Deep Thought finally comes up with the answer, which turned out to be 42.
Oh, wow.
And eventually Deep Thought tells the receivers of the answer, I think the problem, to be quite honest with you, is that you have never actually known what the question was. And I think this reflects a lot to myself. I strongly believe in deep thinking. I think there's nothing that can replace that, no matter what. So no framework, no fancy method, or no feedback can replace deep thinking. And whenever I tackle complex problems, I start by very, very deeply thinking about it, because for me it's the only way it goes. And when I have stopped thinking about it and came to a conclusion, then I go to colleagues and ask for feedback, and then I start thinking again.
I think that's a great, great superhero name for you, and it's totally fitting. I'm reflecting on how we're never bored anymore. And a lot of it has to do with our devices and all the things, the distractions, the billboards, you name it. There's always something else. Like if we're in line now, we can just pull out our phone, right? And escape a little bit. But I feel like, what we are lacking in and the deficit that we're having is in having those deep thoughts. When we find time to do that, and we have to schedule that time, we have to make that time, right? So I told a story on Jordan Dobson's episode, episode 22, that I realized I got a little wrong, but it's about Henry Ford, and I'll tell it real quick here. Henry Ford once hired an efficiency expert to go through the plant and find any unproductive workers. So this expert made his rounds and clipboard in hand to try to find these perpetrators, and he returned to Henry's office and said, I found the problem with one of your administrators. And he said something like, every time I walked by, he was sitting with his feet propped up on the desk. And that man never does a thing. I definitely think you should consider getting rid of him. So Henry Ford, when he learned who the name of that man was, he shook his head and he said, that man had once come up with an idea that saved me millions. And he thought of that idea with his feet in the same position. I love that story. And I think that's sort of one of those things we need to really make time for, because our minds are so cluttered. We can only really have those new thoughts when we break away and we get into a place that's quiet and distraction-free, right?
Yeah. Great story, by the way.
Oh, I love it.
I also think we have to make time for this. And the one thing, I'm lucky because I have to commute to work by train 1 hour. And in the morning, the train is so quiet that we have time to think about stuff. And I enjoy this really pretty much. And I have to say that my best ideas I got from these train rides. Oh, and not from the office, where it's always noisy and loud and people are asking you stuff and meetings and stuff like that.
That's great. That's one of the benefits of commuting. And I commute also. I have an hour and 15 or so, 20 minutes of driving to and from the office. And I don't mind it so much. For one, I live in Colorado, and I see mountains all around me on my drive, so that helps. But my car's a rolling university, man. I've got podcasts, I've got Audible, like, right? I mean, I have a lot of nice, quiet meditation time even in my car. It's really great. So I guess that's the trade-off, right? Like, yeah. I mean, I'm spending a lot on gas, and sometimes I'd just rather be home to be able to teleport over, but you know what? I think there's a lot of value, and to be honest with you, this podcast, the idea of this podcast came through a commute. One of my drives, I'm serious, one of my drives to work, I was listening to my Spotify playlist, a song by Morgan Page. Morgan Page came on called Fight For You, and it just opened up and unlocked something in my head about this user defenders community, about fighting for the users, and it just, that was a result of my drive, so I appreciate the value of that.
Yeah, great. The way back from home to work, I also use I always use the time to listen to podcasts.
Oh, awesome. This is one of them, right?
Yep, this is one of them.
That's great. There's a lot of really great shows out there now. So that's I'm honored. I'm honored that you like the show and you've been with us. You've been with the show from the beginning. So that means a lot. So one of my, and speaking of, all these things seem to segue, but speaking of Tron and fighting for the users, one of my favorite lines from Tron was when he said, "I fight for the users." How do you fight for your users?
I think I fight for building products around people problems and not company problems. Mm. By being user-centered, which means solving user problems and making a business out of it and not solving a company's problem and making paying customers out of it, which never works.
Bam.
I always try to keep the focus on the user. So one of the things I do is I help my team and stakeholders to create empathy with the users and their problems, and to prevent us from building our products and features for the wrong target audience or serving the wrong problems. Because this is something I see in a lot of other product teams and other businesses, that people sometimes build products based on their own personal bias, behaviors, and opinions. So they trust more their gut feeling than facts. And I think we have to prevent that. We have to avoid that. And our gut feeling is not right. It's just an assumption.
Right.
And we have to treat it like an assumption. And I can't stress that enough. We are not our users. Mm. Everyone involved into the product development process has gained special knowledge. And also when we're working in these tech companies, we also have a very close relationship to technology. So we cannot be our users. I think André Glusman puts it very well. He calls this it the Malkovich bias, which is the notion that everyone uses technology the same way you do. And I think our users are very likely completely different from us. And it's often hard for people to accept that the users are not, that they are not users. So what I do is I try to share user test results as often as I can. I try to create empathy by sharing interview videos or hanging up posters on the walls or just talking to my colleagues. I think this is how I fight for the users.
Oh, man. Great answer. And I love how what we do in our field is almost like so scientific. Like there's so many correlations with science and with UX. Mm-hmm. And Jeff Gotthelf, I think in Lean UX, really spelled a lot of that out and articulated that really well. Have you read that book?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, it's a great correlation. But, oh, man, good answer. So this is the last one of this segment, but it's one of my favorites, and we're always thinking about the future. We work in a very futuristic field, and people now realize the value of design and actually won't accept anything but good design in many ways. Mm-hmm. So what does the future of UX look like to you?
So for me, UX design must evolve in order to stay relevant in the future, I think. Because our craft needs to move forward and adapt to new upcoming tasks. For example, we cannot be any longer lone fighters. We have to become team players. We have to enable whole product teams to think in users and user problems and in UX. So we are more, will be more, I think, enablers in the future. And I also think that our job titles will be vanished, they vanish. I think in favor of more roles we have to take on, because we have our main task is not to build the best graphical representation of a product. Most people measure designers by that, which is absolutely nonsense. To measure someone on does the interface looks nice, or are there any fancy animations that, look nice? I think our main task is to make a product successful in terms of business and user goals, and not to craft a stunning interface. And to do that, we have to fulfill more roles than ever before. Sometimes we need to be problem solvers. Sometimes we need to be marketers, visionaries, growth hackers. Or on the other hand, sometimes we need to be interface designers or copywriters or information architects. And I think at the moment our job titles don't reflect all that. So this is why I think design titles might vanish in favor of various roles in the future, and that UX will take over more roles than right now. And I also think that the UX design role will be, or the UX design as a profession will be separated into two big areas. I think the one is the graphical representation of the product, which is the interface, UI design, where designers will take care on the interface, on motion design, on sound design, visual design, on the copy and stuff like that. And on the other hand, the second area would be product design, where designers will take care on problems to solve. They will understand the product more as a holistic, complex system, from acquisition to onboarding, to make user active until to make users paying customers. And they won't hand off their work that easily anymore. They will work together more with marketing, growth, and product management, and to reach their goals. And I think their performance will also be measured by that, that we won't be measured, or at least the product design part won't be measured on how is the interface looking, but more on how successful is the product.
So much there to take in, Nikhil. You are a deep thinker, my friend, because you really are thinking about every aspect of what we do, this field, and of what success looks like. And I think, I believe that this field is evolving in ways that we never imagined, you know, first starting out, and we were just web designers, and it really was more about making something really cool. And I do miss some of that. I do. I miss not having like a lot of rules as a creative person, as a designer, and just trying to push the envelope. But we've evolved so much now, and there's so much noise and so many people on the internet now. We really do have to make it count, and we have to realize, again, continue to keep in focus the reason we're creating something, especially if we're being employed to do so. There's a lot there. But one thought, I'm wondering, do I need to take off my title of lead crusher on my business card? Because I've been crushing it since 96, except I didn't crush it in 2012.
You should keep it.
Okay, all right. That's a reference from Silicon Valley. you sparked some thoughts in your answer, too, about generalists versus specialists. And this is kind of a question that I ask some of the guests, too, because I think there's a couple of schools of thought here. In one sense, we sort of have to be generalists in some ways, because there are so many areas of what we do. There's so many things that we have to consider. But then there's the value of being a specialist, of being a master of something, right? That sort of makes you maybe a little more indispensable. Where do you fall in line on that? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it depends on the product you're working on or the company you're working for. If the product demands a higher amount of specialized people, then they should hire specialized designers, of course. And sometimes a company like a startup needs more generalists, because a designer needs to fulfill more roles than someone who is very specialized in something. So it really depends on the company and the product. But I think normally you want to have both of them. For different tasks, you need both.
That's a good answer. Nikhil, let's wrap up the show with imparting of superpowers. What's one habit that you believe contributes to your success?
Of course, deep thinking.
Deep thinking, I was going to say.
The other thing is collaboration with my colleagues, with product managers, with people from marketing, with team leads, UX directors, stakeholders, with all the people I have to work with at work that are a big inspiration on me.
That's awesome. It sounds like you have a great team and some good leadership over there at Zing.
Yes, I have. Yeah, and I'm very lucky about this, I think.
That's great. And you've certainly stepped up in a leadership role as well, especially with you certainly are a thought leader.
Not only
within your organization, yeah, but I mean in our field. And I think that 5,600 hearts and counting on your article is proof of that. So,
I have to put this in my CV, thought leader.
Yes, man, come on.
Maybe when I lose my job title, maybe I can be a thought leader.
Just become a thought leader. Yes, totally. So, Nikhil, what's your most invincible UX resource or tool you can recommend to our listeners?
My invincible UX design resource is inspiration, because inspiration is very important and in order to come up with new ideas or to take on new perspectives on something or to create new ways of thinking. And inspiration doesn't come for free. It's actually hard work. So there are two things I do to keep me inspired. The first one is what I've already mentioned, traveling. I love traveling. Mm. And I think the big benefit of traveling is that it lets me forget about everything that keeps my mind busy in favor of new experiences. And I think the great experience with traveling is that you get in touch with different cultures and you learn about different mindsets. So this is mainly the reason why I take at least 4 weeks off each year to travel to foreign countries, because it keeps me inspired, fresh-minded, and relaxed. And honestly, I think I do my best work when I come back from one of my trips. But this is just for me. I think it doesn't work for everyone. And the second thing I do to keep inspired is to approach my amazing smart colleagues, because you can learn so much from the people you're working with. And actually, everything I've learned, I learned from someone at work.
Wow.
It's incredible what you can learn from the people that surround you, but you have to approach them. And this is my second source of inspiration.
Oh, that's good. That's really good. I think we can learn something from everyone around us as long as we're paying attention, right? As long as we're desiring to learn. And that could also be what not to do as well, but that's still learning, right?
Yeah, it is.
But, exactly. That's awesome. If you could recommend one book to our listeners, what would it be and why?
Honestly, I have to admit that I don't read many books on UX.
Okay.
I prefer to watch conference talks or to attend UX meetups or to read up-to-date articles on blogs like Medium or Intercom or InVision. Mm-hmm. Usually, there are no good books on the topics I'm working on out there. Hmm. But if you look online, you see that there are hundreds of good online articles on several topics that are not covered in books yet, like chatbots. You will never be able to find a good book on chatbots. But there are many good articles out there. And the one blog I enjoy pretty much is the Intercom blog, because I'm a big fan of Des Trainer and Paul Adams. Okay. I think they do an amazing job there. And yeah, but you know, I don't have a good UX book to recommend, but I can give you a recommendation on an inspiring book, which is Siddhartha by Hermann Hesse.
Huh.
The book is about the life of Buddha.
Interesting.
It's very good. And one part of it I like a lot is where it is explained that knowledge can be learned, but wisdom has to be experienced. And I love that because the book basically tells me that reading books will never help me to acquire wisdom. I have to go out and practice. This is the only way I can reach wisdom. So, very good book.
That's interesting. So I would argue that you can knowledge can be gained from books, which is great, which can be applied to practice and then become wisdom. But I agree with you. I think that you can only gain wisdom by experiencing things. That's definitely true.
We talk a lot about books on the show and the tremendous value reading has on your career and personal growth. As much as I love the written word, and I do, until I have the Flash's superpower, it can be really hard to find the time to sit down with one, which is why I've teamed up with Audible to offer you a free audiobook of your choice. All you have to do is visit audibletrial.com/userdefenders. Get this, even if you cancel your free trial, you still get to keep your book and feel the warm fuzzies in your heart because you'll be supporting the show. I love my Audible subscription and I'm benefiting greatly from it. Might I recommend Design as a Job by Mike Monteiro or Sprint by the Google Venture Guys? Give it a shot and get your free audiobook at audibletrial.com/userdefenders.
What would be your favorite conference? Like, is there a conference video that you kind of find yourself going back to again and again?
I like Mind the Product. On the one hand side, and on the other hand, I attended the last 2 years the UX London. UX London was pretty cool, and they have basically 3 days, and the first day is always about product. The second one, I think it was users, and the third one is about platforms. And they have a lot of inspiring talks there. But I don't think that they put it online. I don't really know. But the Mind the Product conference, they have a lot of videos you can watch.
Yes. It's funny because a friend sent me a link to one of the talks and it's still sitting in my browser tab. I need to make sure I watch it. Yeah. So now with your endorsement, I'm definitely going to watch it. So awesome. So this is the last question of this segment. It's one of my favorites. It's what's your best advice for aspiring UX design superheroes?
3 things.
Okay, cool.
Never stop learning. Practice as often as you can. And stay curious. For instance, quite recently, I started to learn to skateboard. And as I'm 32, I can't go down the street and ask one of the cool kids to tell me how it works. So I have to figure it all out by myself. And what I do is I watch YouTube videos.
Nice.
On how skateboarding is, how it works. And one thing every skateboarding instructor basically tells me is in these videos is practice skateboarding every single day. It's the only way to learn skateboarding properly. And I think this is true for mastering every profession. Hmm. If you want to master a profession, you have to practice as often as you can. And I think it's the same with UX. So if you want to become a very good UX designer, you have to start practicing. And practicing at least every day and then share your results with others to get feedback. And when you, for example, read a book about design, apply what you have learned and share it with others. So I think the secret of mastering a profession always lies in practicing. And there's no other way, or there's no easy way.
Fully agree. Practice makes better. I say better because no one's perfect. But you know what? We get better the more we do things. I couldn't agree more. Nikhil, as we close, can you tell us about the one thing you're working on that you're most excited about?
I don't know if I can speak about it, but
okay. I should reframe that question because a lot of my guests are working on like some kind of secret stuff. I should say, are you permitted to tell us about one thing you're working on. That's okay. I totally understand.
I don't think so.
Okay.
That I'm allowed to talk about what I'm working on, because I've always been working on new products at Xing, and I was always involved in product discoveries and to look in what are we doing and test new stuff and stuff like that. So it's kind of a secret, I guess. Okay.
No, that's, I totally respect that, and that's sort of the nature of our field too.
Yeah, right.
But I'm curious, are you writing? What can you tell us what you're writing about? Or you have another kind of idea or thought leading blog post coming out in the future?
Yeah, I'm actually writing posts or articles on two things. The one topic is the future of UX design.
Aha.
Like we were talking about here in the podcast, because this is something that is very interesting, I think. No one can predict the future, but I want to make a contribution to possible future scenarios. And the other one is about product discoveries. Why to do a product discovery, and what I think is one of the best ways to do it.
Oh, so, fascinating. Yeah. Those are both extremely fascinating topics. I'm sure our defenders are gonna follow you and kind of pine for those as I am. So really excited about that. And speaking of which, Nikhil, why don't you tell our audience the best way to connect and keep up with you?
Definitely Twitter.
Yep.
I'm very active on Twitter and LinkedIn, of course.
Nice. What's your Twitter handle?
It's at Jaff underscore designer.
Now, what is Jaff? Jaff is J-A-F. What does that mean? I've been wanting to ask you.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say it.
Oh, wow.
In the public, but it stands for just another thing.
Oh. Why didn't I see that coming? The first email correspondence we had, you used that email, that URL. So that's okay. Thank you. The mystery solved.
It's solved.
Awesome. All right. Well, hey, Nikhil, thank you so much for being here today. It's been an absolute pleasure and honor chatting with you. Keep deep thinking, keep writing, keep practicing what you do. And I just want to say, fight on, my friend.
Yeah. Thank you pretty much for having me. It was awesome. Pretty much fun. Thanks.
I'll tell you, Nikhil is quite a deep thinker. I especially love the takeaway of scheduling time for deep thought. Nikhil and I both have come up with some pretty great ideas that way, including this show for me. I can't recommend it enough, Defenders. I'm super honored to announce that Nikhil decided to publish his next groundbreaking article with me to complement his episode. It's very appropriately titled, The Future of UX Design. He knocked it out of the park again, and I know everyone will be talking about this. You can check it out on the User Defenders Medium publication at userdefenders.com/pub. Don't forget to slap that heart and share it on Twitter to help get the word out. Extra, extra, read all about it. Join the bi-weekly bugle to stay abreast, such a weird word, of the latest goings-on with this show, and be among the first to read my usable thoughts. Go to userdefenders.com/join. And I'm super excited to announce my next interview is with everyone's favorite UX design superhero, former MailChimp UX director, and now VP of Design Education at Envision, Aaron Walter. Be sure to subscribe at userdefenders.com/subscribe to automatically receive it on your podcast playing device. I want to thank Cesar Limas for the astonishing superhero artwork, Chris Combs for the superhuman editing, and Wyman Gentry for the compelling show music. Thanks again so much for listening, and until next time, fight on, my friends.